Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. This is where Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi bring you the latest news and information on pro wrestling and MMA, as well as interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap with your hosts, Rich Tate, Les Thatcher, and Mike Sempervivi.
Hello again, everyone. It's Wednesday night, September 28th, 2011, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast, and it's Ringside Wrap, and I'm Mike Sempervivi, and you can tell with me opening the show, that means Rich Tate has once again been beaten up by work and unfortunately will not be here tonight. Now, on the other hand, I think we have got official confirmation that Les Thatcher will be. Les, are you there?
I'm here for just a moment to cuss you out, and then I'm hanging up, okay?
That should actually be
you picked the wrong friggin' week to screw with me. I'm going to tell you that right now. You really did.
Well,
if they took your hollowed lucha acrobatic thing and turned it into actual wrestling, would that make you grouchy?
It's hard for them to not make everyone grouchy right now. Even some of the good things that they've done, a lot of it, well, God, most of it makes me grouchy, to be honest.
And then I heard one of your idols today reviewing Raw with another one of your idols, and the older of the two idols three times said, well, that wasn't bad for what it was, and I thought, you friggin' idiot.
Oh, God, who was that?
His name's Dave, and his last name starts with an M.
I think we talked about this when it came to, we pointed it out when it came to the Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston match, that it's like the pay-per-views, it's like everything, Brian, who will hype pay-per-views, and I just... Yes, on today's scale, if you want to look at it that way, yes, you can throw, and I guess it gets to a point for maybe Dave, and I'm not going to make an excuse for him, but I guess it gets that way with a lot of people where a lot of people are beaten down to the point of, well, that's as good as it's going to get, or that's as good as it is. It doesn't mean it's good. It doesn't mean it's good. And
which means that I stand out by being grouchy because I refuse to accept mediocrity, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, good. So then I'm proud of that.
That's it.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to tell you.
Well, it's always left you and Jim Cornette and a lot of these and everybody else who gets that BS tag and gets that, you know, guys are whining about that. Yet at the same time, and this, I like Gabe Sapolsky and I like Dragon Gate in its context for what it is, even though I'm more of obviously a New Japan guy, they're not making loads of money. They're not on TV. The pay-per-view didn't work. I don't know what their iPay-per-view numbers are. I have no idea. And it's not an insult. It's not an insult. But it is what it is. And maybe, the people that have been doing this for a very, very long time. This is where Brian and Dave know better, sometimes do a disservice. It's like, it's settling for second and third and fourth and now in this, you know, fifth-rate sort of stuff. And it's just these things, the timeless things or the things that are timeless, that's what they always work. That's why people get upset and get grouchy when people discount what has always worked for years.
Well, you know, I said to somebody today, it's not the old way or the new way. It's just the right way, and it's not the right way. I have spent more time. I watched a little bit of Raw this week. I watched all of Ring of Honor Saturday. I taped it. I didn't watch Saturday. Now I watched Sunday morning, actually. But I've watched good rest. I've watched good programming. And I'm thinking, you know, the people that write Impact shouldn't watch anything. They should be shot at sunrise and just forgotten at that point. But if the people at WWE would actually like to know how to do subtle comedy, mixed with actual drama, they should watch Harry's Law with Kathy Bates. The one blends into the other. The show's entertaining. This season started, they had quite a few changes in the opening hour. They introduced the new characters. They established who they were. And at the end of the hour, they left you waiting to find out what's going to happen in the next segment, in the next show, the next week. They did, you know, somebody said today, you know, with there's no Bill. I said, well, you know, the old saying about, you know, the old, you know, male chauvinist pig thing about why buy the cow when the milk's free? Why do I, you know, you give me these same three guys that are in this big main event Sunday night, against one another 18,000 friggin' times. Why do I want to buy it? I mean, why, you know, there's nothing to anticipate. There's nothing left to desire. It's you've thrown, you know, I mean, they obviously have so little confidence in the product that they present, that they have to keep beating you over the head with it in hopes that you won't forget it. And you know, which is, that didn't start yesterday, Mike. I remember saying years ago that some promoters thought, do they think all wrestling fans are friggin' idiots, or they all are in Alzheimer's? You don't need to remind me every 15 seconds of something. And if I didn't see Punk and Cena and Del Rio together, even in the same room, it would be better, and I'd be more apt to spend $50 on Sunday night than you giving it to me, you force feeding them down my throat, because this is not Picasso, Michelangelo, and Rembrandt, for Christ's sake. I'm sorry, it's not, and it's not Steamboat, Flair, and Briscoe. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. It's just, you know, it's not. And so the product is just, you know, their numbers are down, and they're entertaining themselves. Buddy Fuller said years ago during the War of Atlanta in the office one afternoon when somebody came up with an idea which wasn't, really too smart in that particular situation. But he said, you know, you got a war going on here. You better be damn sure what you put out there. He said, now if you got the only game in town, you can put any friggin' thing you want out there, and they'll either buy, they have to buy it, and that's the situation you've got now. Put whatever you want out there. Let's entertain ourselves. Let's do whatever we want, and go on. And it's sad, you know. And I think anybody who's spent half a century given their life's blood, basically, to add a little class and dignity to the business, would have to be pissed, and if they're not, they're pretty much clinically dead, I think.
I think it's cool they're not pissed because they're not even bothering to watch. I mean, what is the psycho? I don't understand. They have two stars. They have Randy Orton, they have John Cena. That's it. Alberto Del Rio, they go through, and we've talked about it on here throughout the whole time. I like him. Again, say it again, like him. I like the gimmick, I like the announcer, I like a lot about him. I think, and he tries, I think he delivers his stuff in a bleak. Well, with that said, people, I don't think invested in him, and they did not invest in him. You know, you could hear crickets sometimes when the shtick was going on. It's like, you know, if you put a laugh track behind it and you put it on TV, I think, okay, that would work. But obviously, the people there, he's not connecting with. They put the title, finally, after... Well, after all this time, they finally put the title on him. Then they take it right off of him. A guy who could actually use a long reign with a title to put it back on a guy that people have talked about. Well, so Del Rio can win in Mexico. People talked about Vince freaked out against Monday Night Football the first week when the rating dipped the way it did. And then you put him on commentary, you know, going back to a five-man, a WCW level. I even remember Tony Schiavone saying this. It's a five-man broadcast team when they brought somebody out. Just because of the absurdity of having five guys on con, and you send him out there, and he dies there. And yes, he gets his revenge at the end, but again, is that going to make anyone buy a pay-per-view? What is the psychology behind their constant thing of, we got to create 8 new stars, and they don't develop, and then they cut them off at the knees, and then they, well, again, maybe not even at the knees, but Del Rio needs certain things that seem to be obvious. Why do they hang people out to dry in the way that they do? Is it so for DVD fodder later so they can say they overcame something? Which I swear they did that to Sheamus last year.
Well, the one thing I will agree with Brian about, and that is, and I like John Cena as a person. I truly do. I think John is a good gentleman. But he is also the puppet. He is the Pinocchio manufactured by Giuseppe. By the WWE factory. And that's for a while he broke out of that. He didn't break out of it with The Rock. He broke out of it with Punk, and it paid dividends. And now it's right back to the same old, same old. Here's the thing. I've said I try to teach this, and again, I won't debate it with anybody because I know it's right. It's plain. When I say that, is that egotistical? I don't really give a shit if it is or not. You know, I've been around the block once or twice. In this day and age, with everybody basically smart to this business, your strongest weapon is the element of surprise. My point being here, the minute you heard of Tonga and his conversation with Laurinaitis, you knew he was going to end up being a lawyer. Okay, first of all, I don't think that's the strong, you know, it's not the greatest gimmick in the world, although I will agree, since he is a lawyer, then he's going to be more comfortable in that than something else. But you've already tipped your hand. You've already told me what's going to happen, so it's no surprise. What would have been, you know, and very simply, if somebody had thought past the end of their nose, here's what I mean, and when I say what I would have done, what I think would have been effective and at least a little surprising and maybe created some interest is that next week Triple H goes out and does his standardized 15-minute opening, which I think needs to change immediately, if not sooner. But whenever he's out there doing whatever it is he's doing, Otunga comes out I need to confer with you on something, and Triple H looks a little surprised, confused exactly what, you're not obviously dressed, you're not wanting a match. No, I represent Christian or so-and-so, in a hostile working environment or, whatever the deal is. And okay, now, is that going to sell a trillion? No, it's not going to sell probably, but it's surprise, and it gives people something to chew on, something to think about. The minute that Laurinaitis and Otunga had the conversation, did you know what was going to happen?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, and so many casual people did. I mean, never mind. You know, so often they think that you're so immersed in this, and I'm immersed in this, and Brian and Dave and Mike Johnson over at Insider, but I went to the gym yesterday, and one of my clients who's in his early 60s and is a wrestling fan. He's been a wrestling fan. In fact, he knows my background. He doesn't call me by name. He calls me Wrestler. He's a Southern guy. Hey, Wrestler, what are you doing today? he said, I didn't get to see a lot of my wrestling Monday night. I said, you didn't know. He said, I want to ask you a question. I said, okay, what's that? He said, why do they have those girls on Raw wrestle? Why don't they just have them come out there and prance around? Because they can't wrestle. And I said, Don, you're asking a question I don't have a friggin' answer for. But I would totally agree with you. Now, this is just a casual fan, Mike. This is not a guy who, I bet he don't even, you know, I bet he don't even know how to find a wrestling website. He watches wrestling but he is also smart enough, casual fan or no, to realize that Kelly can't slap her ass with both hands, as the old saying goes. She can't find her ass. Well, she doesn't have much of an ass, come to think of it. But, she's a beautiful girl with a nice smile, but she has no talent in that ring. And they seem to keep shoving her. You know, how many times, it's just almost like, hey, those people don't like her, let's shove her out there. You know, it's, I don't know. I don't understand. And very quickly, we'll move on, and then I'll let you see. But talking about the element of surprise or creating, one of the company's biggest is Perception is reality. Don't forget, perception is reality. Don't forget, perception is reality. Okay, well, here's my perception. Cody Rhodes, you're the Intercontinental Champion, so I'm going to walk back to the back, and the first 10 people I see, if one of them happens to be the janitor of this building and the other one, second one happens to be Howard Finkel, those people are coming out to be in a battle royal for your title. How important is that title? You have just diminished the value of that title with that statement.
Well, and the thing is, you've also fined guys, and you just got finished with your promo that you just got done talking about, an insane amount of money, which you now have moved to Mark Henry, and now you say you used guys before you suspended them. And as all this is going on, which I guess there's a labor issue, does Triple H have control of the company issue, wouldn't Cody Rhodes immediately then go to, you know, be in on this meeting about, you know, in the back with Otunga? I mean, wouldn't he be complaining instantly that, you know, no matter what I said verbally, you sent me out there after saying I had a zipper in my head, and he did, you know, getting busted open with that bell on SmackDown. It's like the logic gaps that they just skip over. That podium is still sitting outside, the GM podium. All of these goofy, dumb things. It's amazing. You know, talk about Nick Diaz.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the fine. If you put that, you know, Mike Johnson is not a sports fan. Brian Alvarez wouldn't know one of Seattle Mariner if you held a gun to his head. You'd have to kill him. you would. You'd have to. Or a Seahawk. Ask him to tell you who the quarterback of the Seahawks is.
Oh, I've messed with him on that before, and it's just like he's got no – I mean, he shuts down.
Right, exactly. But the point is, you are – I'm a sports fan. Rich is a sports fan. A lot of people are sports fans. And here's the thing. There are football players making $10, $12 million a season. Not a year, a season. And for the worst infraction, they will never be fined six figures.
Okay.
And here's two guys who are mid-card in the WWE who are lucky to be making seven figures. Well, Miz probably did, you know, at one point, whether he is this year or not, I don't know. And I'd almost guarantee that Ron's not. And you're going to find him $250,000. There's nothing realistic about that at all. And when I say that, does some 12-year-old kid understand? Some probably do, but their parents do. And so, you know, I've used this example before, but it's this was brought to my attention, and I've always remembered this particular example, and I'll state it here once again, if you don't mind. Another wrestler said years ago about walking the fine line between believability and fantasy, okay? You walk into the kitchen, your 9-year-old son has got his hand in the cookie jar when he'd been told not to. You say, okay, son, if I catch you with your hand in that cookie jar again, I'm going to burn your I'm going to drop your pants and burn your ass. And you say that with authority, he's going to believe it. If you say, son, if I catch you with your hand in that cookie jar again, I'm going to throw you over the moon. He may only be 9 years old, but he knows you're full of crap. You have crossed that fine line between reality and fantasy. And that $250,000 is fantasy. If you understand anything about professional sports at all.
Well, you have said it. Jim Cornette has always said it. It's, you know, have a fine that people believe. Because I guess, you know, people would wonder about Smoky Mountain, I guess, on TV when they would have, you know, X amount of dollar fines. It's like, look, for the people that are watching, I mean, it's got to make sense. And it's going on at this time. And it shows you, as much as WWE wants to be pop culture, they don't have their hand on it whatsoever. The incident with Sean Avery and Wayne Simmons, the hockey player, where Simmons apparently the homophobic slur at Avery, and they're bringing up Kobe Bryant being fined $100,000, and why, you know, obviously people are using that as a precedent, using it as a talking point for sports talk radio sort of stuff too, where it's, you know, well, what should Simmons have been suspended, you know, or fined if they could have figured out that he actually said it, which the NHL doesn't fine him. That's a completely different story, but you know, what would it be if Kobe's was $100,000? It's like, well, you got to scale it down for what he makes. And it's like very simple logic things that are taking place on sports talk radio. You know, you don't want to be sports, you don't want to be entertainment, and you're not either one. And it's just, it sucks. It sucks.
Yeah, well, you know that. Yeah, I don't know if you ever listen to Weekly or not, and if you don't, that's fine. You know, it's no big deal. But I had brought up how cool Patti LaBelle had been to the winner of America's Got Talent by stepping off the stage after they'd done their duet, and how classy it was that she gave him the spotlight because it was his moment. She'd, you know, she, 67 years old, she'd won everything, and you know, was a multimillionaire and on and on and on, so she didn't need that. And somebody on the board, you know, thought that was, well, he opened a wrestling talk show with Patti LaBelle. And last week I said, you're damn right I did. Because to me, if you got any brains, you parallel what you do in the wrestling business with real life. And it's just, you know, when we get off this phone, I'm going to watch X Factor for the second time. I taped it last week, didn't have a chance to watch it. I got home too late, had to go to bed and get up at 4:30 Thursday morning and go right back into the friggin' gym again. But the first X Factor, 2 hours, there were three performances that they went so deep in their own soul to and brought the audience on stage with them, and all four judges stood to give them a standing ovation. And believe me, I'm a Simon Cowell fan. Simon doesn't stand up and applaud for just anybody. It's not a, you know, not something he does all the time. But these three people were in tears themselves because of the emotion they put in their performance, and they honestly brought tears to my eyes. I can't even begin to tell you when a wrestling match has done that, because that's the difference between touching your audience and getting a cheap pop of a lot of crazy high spots. And a lot, most young performers, and again, when I say young, it's only because it's the way they're taught, it's the way they're programmed, or not programmed is more the point, or not taught. They don't go out there and try to reach down and touch you, you know, in your soul. They just go out there and go through the motions. And these three singers just, I mean, it was just amazing. Because, you know, and that's what we should be, you know, and that's why I parallel things with this. That's why I watch these shows, because a top-flight professional wrestler, if he or she is worth a damn, will reach down and touch you like that. You know, when Ricky Steamboat made a comeback, well, you know, you can go right back to WrestleMania a couple years ago, and the 5 minutes of Steamboat and Steamboat and Jericho spent in the ring would have been the highlight of that friggin' show if it hadn't been for that first Michaels and Taker match. It would have been the highlight. And Ricky's biggest move, even when he was younger, was a crossbody off the top. But it was how he, his eyes, his body language, his, because he believed what he was doing. And most of these kids don't. They just do it. You know? And that's why I watch these shows, because I want to be touched like that. You know? And that, did I do that all the time? Hell no. Nobody does it all the time. There's no such thing as a living, breathing, fleshy human being that can go out and be perfect, you know, on a nightly basis or a daily basis. But I sure went out there to try to do that, you know, and that's what I expect out of the kids that I teach. That's what I expect out of these friggin' high dollar shows, and I don't see it most of the time.
My first favorite wrestlers, Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, and Jay Youngblood, and I got emotionally invested in them. It's simple psychology. And that's how when you hear comments so often, they're either young kids or fools, because it's like any TV show, but it's especially with some of these shows like X Factor, America's Got Talent, American Idol, the dance show, those types of shows, it's even more of a raw form, and it's an exploitive form, but it's just, it's simple locking in your audience and touching, you know, different people and a cross-section of people. And it's what it's for all forms of entertainment, but especially professional wrestling, where you had to go out and touch the people, you know, and they were right there, a couple seats away. You had to draw them in every single week to the same places. That's how much you had to touch them every single week. It's basic stuff that always works, and it's the basis of sports, of why we get sucked into sports. It's the basis of all forms of entertainment, especially television, especially these types of shows. It's simple stuff, and it's disappointed, and more than anything, it's not even being really that angry at WWE, because it's, you know, there is Ring of Honor, which I wanna ask you about. There are other options out there, but they have to, instead of freaking out, you know, Del Rio should have held on to the belt. Why? Because you need to start getting people and figuring out a way to invest in him. It's a long process. It's a process that has to do with how you train your guys, the developmental system that you have, regaining the trust of fans. And that's the biggest thing. It's, and I always point to New Japan, but it's a long, and when you screw up, it's a long way to crawl back. But you have to crawl back. You have to keep going. You can't just, basically, this, and I don't know if it would be called hotshotting less. It seems like it's a new era of hotshotting. And they're hotshotting what, in, you know, for the most part has been kind of shitty. And that's what they seem like they're doing now. Can you call it a new era of basically hotshotting? Because they blew it with Punk. All they had to do was take advantage of the fact that they had something raw and organic and something to build on and something that seemed to be working. But they it looks like a disappointing pay-per-view buy rate. The TV after that pay-per-view wasn't exactly what they... I mean, Jesus, did they expect... It just happened. Do they expect the you know, 5 million fans that they have disappeared from them to come back just because they heard something, you know, of the last week? It takes time to rebuild that stuff. I don't know. Sorry, ranted
well,
there.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but it's, I've used this this statement many, many, many times, because an old timer said this to me almost 50 years ago. And it's about anticipation. He said, you know, kid, you'll never see a stripper come out on the stage naked and put their clothes back on. There's nothing to anticipate. And there is nothing to anticipate. I mean, you know, there's not. I mean, it's like I say, they tipped their hand about the Otunga thing before they did it. You've seen Cena and Punk and Del Rio in different configurations, but you've seen them together how many times? So why do I, you know... And Hell in a Cell is meaningless because it's, you know, how many matches? I mean, Orton and Mark have only been together once. Why would they be having a blow off in a damn cage? I mean, it's not ultimate anything. It's a theme. You know, it's no more than I believe in. Now, some young kid may get a nut watching, you know, Impact with their, you know, Six Sides of Steel every match, you know, it's overkill, and it's overdone, and by, you know, it becomes the sameness. You know, my only complaint with Ring of Honor, and when I say complaint, I thought I liked the main event. I liked the inside the Ring of Honor thing. I liked them talking about the Code of Honor and explaining it. I liked them previewing the show the following week. One of the things I thought was extremely exciting is they actually knew what the matches were going to be when they opened the show. They didn't make any, you know, Mike, I don't like the way you're dressed tonight. You've got a main event right now. With, you know, that's so hokey and bullshitty that I can't even begin to tell you, because that's not professional anything. I mean, that's like telling the Ravens, well, yeah, you guys are playing a game today, but wait till you see who comes out of the other tunnel, then you'll know who it is. Huh? I bought a ticket for this? But anyway, the only thing I didn't like about the Ring of Honor show was the opening match. And I'm an Adam Cole fan. I've worked with Adam on several occasions at CZW in Philly. The only thing I didn't like about the opening match, and I sent Adam an email and told him, I said, 3 minutes in, it became a four-man choreographed dance with the referee standing there with his mouth hanging open as a spectator. And the reason I didn't like it is it was their first show. It should have and they're trying to establish a lot of things. The one thing I would have wanted to establish on that first match is this is not the X Division. This is not every independent guy under 200 pounds that you've ever seen. And that's all that was, plain and simple. And I would have also wanted to establish that my referees, which is one of the things I like about WWE, is my referees are in charge here. And that referee was not in charge of anything. Those four guy spots were just so, they've been done. Everybody's done them. I mean, maybe theirs were altered a little bit and changed and done in a different progression, but still, you've seen him, I've seen him, we've all seen him, and I wouldn't have wanted to open my show that way. I think Nigel and Kevin will do well together. They've just got to find their rhythm. I like the way that they had Lethal preview next week, you know, and things like that. I like, you know, Jimmy explained the Code of Honor. I liked a lot of things, but that was my one sticking point that I, you know, with the show. Other than that, I thought, yeah, okay. And you know, that's basically, somebody asked me about this. That format is basically the way I formatted Southeastern Wrestling back in 1974. I mean,
well,
it's one hour wrestling show. And it's fresh now because it hasn't been done in so long.
That's, I have more to ask you on that. We have actually a call right now. John from Detroit, who I believe called us last week, is on the line. John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hey, you know what? I have two gripes. I have it like in TNA, like Les said, I don't like it when the referees just look hokey when they start going away from the match. I mean, it's just not believable, okay? When they get tangled up in the outside ring action, it just doesn't look right.
They're like, you know, they're rodeo clowns, not referees.
Right. They just, to me, the ones, I mean, it's just like, okay, you're supposed to be keeping your eye on the match, but you have seven people outside doing other things. Well, keep your eyes on the match. That's what you're getting paid for. No, I got to go over here and see what they're doing on it. No, keep your eyes on the match. It just looks so bad and so hokey.
Yeah, right. John, you're right. You know, one of the things that I've said, too, and, you know, is like when there's all four wrestlers are in, I'm thinking, can the referee count? I mean, just by common sense, two of these guys don't belong here. Why are you not at least starting a count? But they realize it's a setup for some big elaborate four-way spot, and they just step back in the corner. So it's like they become spectators immediately. Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
But in the training of referees, what was the first thing, the biggest thing that you said, you know, during a match? You know, this is, you know, what was like the first thing you would tell them or teach them about being a referee when it came to a match, you know, beginning and going on?
Well, in a tag match like that, my first point of order is there's four guys in here, two of them don't belong. You find those two guys and you start, okay, you give them a little leeway to do something. I understand that's the reason the four guys are in there. But you don't step back out of their way to give them room to run an elaborate up and down, over and back, and quadruple somersault high spot that takes 3 or 4 minutes. You start count, you know, you tell the guys, okay, get your, you know, and then you start your count. One of the things, if you would come into my dressing room as a wrestler for the first time, and you were not, you'd never seen us, you didn't know anything about us, one of the things I'd say is, you know, my referee is the boss in that ring. First of all, you do not lay your hands on him. Do not touch him. If you shove him, grab him, throw him around, he's going to disqualify you right there on the spot, period, end of story. And he's in the right and you are in the wrong. Also realize that if you're not broke by four, he's going to get the five. He's not going to stop at four and start all over again for you. Listen to his count. If you're going to throw a couple punches or something, get it in that four-second period, because if you can't, then you're not going to get it in at all. He's not going to stop his count for you. I don't, because then that puts that puts more heat on the referee at some point than it does on the wrestler. So that, you know, and again, if you can't get your shit in, you know, in that 3 or 4 seconds. I mean, if I've got you back in the corner, referees, okay, break it. And the minute he says one, I can shoot a gut shot to you. I can throw a forearm, drop a knee into your midsection, step back. The minute I give that clearance, the referee stops his count, and I move in again. It's about actually knowing what you're doing in there. That's part of the problem, you know. And the referee, the heat goes on the referee if he has to stop his count repeatedly, and not on the wrestlers.
John, you got another question?
Yeah, well, actually, I have two more, but I'm about to
all
get
right.
to the second one. Wrestlers who come to the ring, they're not involved in the match with their wrestling tights on. Or they go out in public, like last week, Hernandez and whoever that guy is, and the two chicks all went to the tattoo parlor with their wrestling gear on. Who goes to anywhere? I mean, you don't go to a football game in a tuxedo. So why would you go out in public or come to the ring knowing that you don't have a match in your wrestling gear?
In the
because
80s,
they don't think past the end of their nose, John. You know, you've been reading my mail, my friend, because that drives me out of my friggin' mind. I agree with you 100%. It's like last week on Raw when they threw Miz and Truth out of the building. I said, well, you know what? That director, is he the most brilliant man? He said, you know, maybe they're going to throw somebody out of the building tonight. I think I'll have a camera outside waiting. You know, which is stupid, too. But, no, I agree. That was like when Punk came back and he had been, you know, he had walked away. He wasn't on the roster. He didn't have a contract, but he was dressed in his tights.
Right. I mean, I'm just
No logic to it whatsoever. John, let me ask you a question. I think you called a year or so ago, and you told me you worked out at the gym where Ron Love works out.
Yes, I like to change up my gyms, and there's so many gyms in Michigan around Detroit now.
Yeah.
Probably next January, I'll probably be back at Powerhouse. But you know, I gave Ron your information. Did he call you?
No, he did not. That devil. I'd love to talk to him. I love Ron.
I mean, how can you put it? He's making money, man.
He was making money when he used to come stay at my house getting ready for a couple Olympias. It's when I worked for John Perillo. He'd come stay at the house and we'd train twice a day together. And great guy. I love him to death. I'd love to talk to him. I've lost.
Did he eat you out of house at home? Or do you want the money back that he?
I just lost track of him. You know, I was looking on the IFBB website and stuff to see if I could find some way, you know, to contact. You know, they've got a lot of the pros on there, but the contact information that I saw for Ron was it wasn't any good. So, I couldn't even send him an email. But if you happen to see him, tell him I would love to talk to him. I've just lost track with him over the years. But anyway,
I mean,
I thought it was you.
When I told him your name, his eyes went up like bubs. And I was like, okay, he must know.
We hung out. We were buds. Yeah, he was just a real good guy. I love Ron to death. I just haven't had, like I say, we lost touch. And I'd love to, you know, make contact with him again. So if you get the chance, please tell him again to give me a shout or email me or something, okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right,
and,
well, you got another question. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut in, but
Another question is, it's more of a suggestion because obviously TNA and WWE, because I'm more of a TNA fan. I can't watch WWE anymore. I'm sorry, guys. It's just not, you know, it's just not, no, I can't do it.
You got a stronger constitution than I got, John, because I have a hard time watching Impact.
you know what it is? It's the long-winded promos. And this is my suggestion to them. And this is only my suggestion. Why don't you put the promos that last for 20, more than 5 minutes, almost every wrestling geek has a smartphone, and they probably know every organization that's out there. Why don't they just put those promos, those behind-the-scenes shots, don't put them on TV, send them to people's emails. Let them pick it up on their smartphone. Don't do it. No, no, no more TV. You know, really, no more TV.
You know what I like about that suggestion, John, is I don't have a smartphone, so I wouldn't have to get any.
But you know what? You know what? I can't. You know what? I just can't do it anymore. I tried. I gave it the college try, man. I really did.
I understand. I do. I totally understand.
The worst promo I've ever seen Ric Flair in lasted about, he was good for the first 2 minutes. He was great for the first 2 minutes. He was good for the first 4 minutes. And it slowly started winding down. By the time it got to like 10 minutes, I was like, Jesus Christ, no wonder his wife left him.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to somebody the other day on an interview show about formatting wrestling. And what you're talking about is very true. Back, televisions that I worked in the 60s, and the televisions that I helped format or produce in the 70s and the 80s, the longest interview segment was 3 minutes. That was it, and we were able to do business with that. Yeah, I think I think going back to the Punk and Triple H stuff. Those confrontations just became redundant and lost a lot of steam because they were pushed past the point of being any value.
I mean, one of the greatest promos I've ever seen was when Terry Funk had that, what was it? I call it I don't know what the name of his promo was, but I just call it when he had that fake Ric Flair disrobe, and he had a yellow streak going down his back, and I smiled. I said, this guy just called another man yellow, and I just laughed, and I said, oh my God, I couldn't take that in real life. I mean,
Terry,
in fake life, I wouldn't take
just
that.
Very creative stuff.
And Terry Funk has some of the greatest. Ric Flair really never did anything for me, but a Terry Funk promo, that guy is really nuts.
John, I want to thank you very much for the call. But, yeah, Terry Funk, who was crazy, or at least portrayed crazy, and became and was believable and was one of those guys, like Les, you were talking about with the Harry's Law show, was funny, obviously somewhat on purpose, but you can be funny and scary. You can be all things at all times, and you can come across that way. And they have these guys, John Cena being the greatest example, can only do at this point one thing, and that's be goofy.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't believe what you're selling, then nobody's going to buy it. I mean, they don't believe it either. That's, it comes back to touching people down in their soul, and making them feel what you feel. And if you don't do that, then there's, you don't draw them in and make them want to go to the next level with you, I think. John, it's been a real pleasure. Listen, be sure, if you see Ron, tell him I'd love to talk to him and give him my best. And it's always a pleasure talking to you, my friend. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I think he's off. Some of the buzz of his phone was starting to get a little bad on this end here. But John, thank you for back-to-back weeks to calling in. He was actually trying to audition, I think, to take your place last week when he called in at the end of the show. But it's actually something that he had said there when it comes to referees. And this was a nuance that I picked up on as a little kid because it happened in the 80s when that's when I remember it. Whether how long they've been doing it, I don't know. There seemed to be a little flaw. And I never really understood this. Countouts. You would have two guys fighting outside. A guy would roll back to break the count and then roll back outside of the ring again to break the referee's count, to continue doing damage to the other guy. But then, sometimes, when the count got to 9, a guy would go running in the ring and the other guy would be counted out. How long? Just an oversight, or I don't know. For some reason, I thought about that when we were talking about referees. Was that a ploy that was used, like a booking ploy, or was it just something that just got forgotten?
Sometimes people ask me questions. I don't have any. I ask the same question, and nobody can give me an answer. But it's like if you and I are fighting outside, and you roll under that bottom rope and make it into the ring and then roll back out, I haven't rolled in, right?
Yeah.
mean, I'm still out there, so maybe you stopped. But if he's doing a double count on both of us, you've stopped the count on you, but I haven't stopped the count on me, so why hasn't he counted me out? I agree. Well, you know, that's one of the things that I see now, because we have to have we're obligated to have at least one dive through the ropes. And we're talking about logical things. There's something, you know, I can remember, and I was trying to think the other day how they built to it, but I remember as a commentator, it was on Gene Anderson sacrificed himself, and I can't remember how the angle went, but Gene sacrificed himself physically so that they would not lose their titles and Ole could win the match. And as commentators, we were awed and amazed, and oh my God, you know, he sacrificed himself physically to be sure they didn't lose the titles. What? But you know what? I have grown extremely weary of. And again, you say I'm old. You say whatever the hell you want. I don't really care. But guys, how many times do you have to dive, do a goofy bump through the ropes when you end up selling it as bad as the guy you hit? When are you going to get smartened? When are you going to smarten the hell up and not do it? I mean, Mike, if I walk around, turn the corner and come through a door and you smack me in the ribs with a baseball bat once or twice, I don't think I'm going to come through to the third or fourth time. And if I do, I'm going to look like the biggest fool in the world. But, I mean, it's just like, you know, I don't care if it's Kofi. I don't care if it's Styles. I don't care who the hell it is. But they keep doing the same stuff and hurting themselves as bad as they hurt the other guy. Does that make some kind of sense to you?
Never has. And it was always like announcers trying to pull. That's why they call it a high-risk maneuver. No, that's why they should call it a dumbass maneuver.
Exactly.
And again, you know, we actually got a class in Popular Night tonight. We actually got a caller from Jacksonville calling in. Caller, are you there? Do you have a name?
Sure. How you guys doing?
Not
too bad,
good.
Man.
How about you?
I'm all right. This is Jeff Luce. I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
Hey, Jeff, what's happening?
Not too much. Not too much. Excuse me. I'll give you my opinion on that, what you were just talking about, but I wanted to discuss a couple other things, too. As far as wrestlers throwing themselves around the ring, like you're describing, like when I saw Mr. Olympia do that in, like, 1982, I thought that was the coolest thing since, you know, sliced bread. You know, I was like, wow, I've never seen anybody do this. Of course, I had never seen Lucha Libre, you know, before 1982, so I didn't know it was, you know, already a big deal elsewhere in the world. But I think that if used sparingly, it's not a bad thing to do within a match. But nowadays, it's like everybody does it, and it's, like you guys said, it's pretty stupid. If you go through the ropes and you hit your opponent, to me, that should be an automatic double count out, double DQ, whatever. Maybe not a double DQ, but definitely a double count out, because neither of the two should be able to get back up. You follow me?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. A normal person makes something, does something like that, in anything. You throw yourself into stuff like that. Yeah, either you'd be dead, or you'd have somebody have a broken arm or something like that. And somebody holds their gut, the other guy holds their head, they look at each other, they wait till the referee gets to eight, and then they both roll back in at the same time. It's just, again, it's stupid. It's a logic, there's a huge logic gap, and just a huge, it takes you completely out of what you're watching. I didn't need a rest bit. There's no commercial breaks in wrestling. Well, unless a match is going on for an hour or something like that. But, you know, I didn't need to rest. You know, those guys shouldn't have to rest if they're not doing moves like that. Let's keep it going.
Exactly. Now, I had a couple questions for Les about Ron Fuller.
Okay.
You know how I like to talk about Ron in Southeastern Promotion down in Mobile, Pensacola, Dolphin, and, you know, the rest. But
right.
What was the reasoning for him using a crew? I think it was 14 in the summer and 12 in the winter, or maybe it was vice versa of that. Why did he always kept his crew in those two numbers?
Well, I helped build that territory. I worked that territory, but I never paid any attention to what you just. But I'm sure you're right. Economics was the biggest thing. You know, it was the idea of the territory wasn't that big. It was keeping everybody busy. There were some local guys that he would, work in occasionally, but the full-time guys, it was just a matter of, economics, of how many guys you could make a living at one time. And a lot of times, I don't know that the season had so much to do with the number, but how business was,
Right.
I know, of course, I spent more time with developing the Southeastern business up and out of the Knoxville office, but back then it wasn't so much how many guys, because it was winter or summer, but it was more to the point, well, business is down a little bit, so we're not using as many guys. And a lot of times there, it was mix and match. Sometimes you might use a few more of the local guys if business was off quite a bit, and so you didn't have so many full-time guys to worry about making a living, because the part-time, the local guys obviously had jobs, at something else. And but then if business was running full bore, then you would use the local guys a little more sparingly, and you could afford to use some guys who had more star power, who were doing it full time. But the whole idea was obviously to keep your guys working, because back then, and with the territories, there was the old joke is telephone, telegraph, or telewrestler. And the guys kept in touch with guys in the other territories. And if everybody was always looking to better themselves, or when they wore their welcome wore out, or their drawing power wore out in a particular territory, they were looking someplace to go. So, if you called your buddy in Mobile and, business is down, but I'm still making a decent living. Where if there were too many guys on the roster full time, then that guy's going to say, wow, I'm struggling here. We're playing hell drawn, and nobody's making any money. Well, that's not what the promoter wants out on the grapevine. So it's, a lot of it's a matter of economics.
Yeah. And what about the? Well, we know Robert and Jimmy were always going to be around, but he had we know he had a very strong relationship with the Armstrongs. But Jerry Stubbs is somebody he kept around from Knoxville all the way till he finally sold off Mobile to David Woods. What do you know the dynamic of that relationship?
Jerry was just a good hand. He came in. He and Mike Stallings both had played a little minor league baseball, had been catchers. They didn't come in exactly at the same time, but they came in just as underneath guys initially. Mike got out of the business at one point, but Jerry was a good hand. He got along with everybody. He was good, he was easy to work with. And then they turned him, did the mask gimmick and stuff, and he just stayed on. Jimmy and Robert were in and out some. Robert and his brother, depending on how their relationship was, or if Robert was trying to be the star booker somewhere else, with Arms, it was a relationship that grew. Ron actually first met Bob when he worked in and out of Knox or in and out of Atlanta. Ron worked in and out of Atlanta a little bit, during the war, there in 73, 74, and but then they actually, it all started in Knoxville. Bob was a strong baby face. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He worked heel for a while.
He was a great heel. Oh my God, was he a great heel?
He went down
in Mobile when he was a heel, but take my word for it, he was an awesome heel. Him and Jimmy,
I don't have to take your word for it. I remember how
bastard
was when he punched me. When he was. No, I mean that good naturedly. I love Bob. Bob's the Armstrong. All of them are like family for me. But so it was, and then Bob fit right in. He was part of the booking in Mobile, And, you know, it just, it grew. So, I mean, relationships like that grew. It's like my relationship with Ron and I just became friends in Tampa in 1971. And we traveled mm-hmm. together, and they asked me to be godfather to their youngest son, and I was tickled to death to do that. Then he and June, his first wife, moved to, they were down in down around the Tampa territory. And then when, you know, we stayed in touch, I was in Charlotte. And then when he bought Knoxville, he knew I had, you know, it had a strong run in there as a baby face, and he wanted me to, you know, put his TV together. So he called and he said, I want you to come in and help me out here. And I said, yeah, because we got along anyway. And, I mean, that was the thing, too. It wasn't just a business relationship with us. We, you know, we ran the streets together when he was single and, you know, partied together. And, well, even when he wasn't, I mean, I was, their home was open to me all the time in Knox. So, and then I went down to Pensacola when they opened. Well, before I moved down there, actually, I was involved with keeping the TVs together on both ends anyway. And then I went down there and lived for a while, and then I just, I was homesick for Knoxville, honestly, and went back there when Flair and Jimmy Crockett and Blackjack Mulligan bought that. So, you know, a lot of it, you know, a lot of time, the working relationships came out of friendships anyway. And then, you know, they just fit in like that. So,
yeah. So I'd like for you guys to start getting some Southeastern guys on there, because I would love to sit and talk Southeastern with them, you know, get... You know, it'd be just a kick for me. I'd just love to hear what they have to say about the old days.
Don't forget about Jerry's show. I mean, yeah, we haven't had any guests on in a while. It's hard to get us all here at once to actually have guests, but we'll be doing it soon. But, you know, Jerry Oates, you know, his show as well with Mike tomorrow night. I mean, they usually have, you know, great guests on there too, and guys from the past. I don't know if you listen to that one. That's definitely one to check out.
I
want to mention right now before we go any farther is I just found this out today and made my changes, but the Gulf Coast Reunion, which is talking about Southeastern guys and Jerry and Bobby Simmons and Mike, I didn't know it had been changed. Originally, the Gulf Coast Reunion next March was supposed to be the second weekend, but I'm told now, I just found out today that they're having a big race at the Speedway, and they need where we would normally park and you know, and have our reunion for parking space for the race. So they've moved it to the first weekend in March. So anybody that actually attends, independent wrestlers, promoters, or any of the guys that don't know, check in, because it's going to be actually the second and third of is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, wait a minute. Yeah. Yeah. Second and third. Friday and Saturday.
I wish I could attend one of those reunions just to be a fly on the wall, not getting away, but, you know, it's for wrestlers only, you know, way
yeah.
I view. And before I go, I'd just like to say, because I haven't had a chance to say anything, but I'd just like to give a rest in peace shout out to Donna Christoncello. She was probably my favorite lady wrestler ever. And, I know it's been a few weeks since she passed on, but I'd just like to put that out there. Let
Donna
the
was a sweetheart. Yeah, I agree with you, man. I really do. She was a class lady, and I used to enjoy talking to Donna at the Mobile Reunion Center. We'll sure miss her.
All right. You guys take care.
Hey,
right.
You too, man. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey. You can well on. Hell way to go out there on the static end there. But, Les, I don't know how much more you want to do tonight.
I think, by gosh, we pretty much covered a lot of territory, and we've had two guests. Hell, we're better off without Rich. If you're listening, Rich, I'm just teasing. And when you opened the show, I thought Rich has sent me an email. Are you going to be with us? Like, you know. And I thought, well, maybe you should join us, Rich. Hell, that'd be cool too. I'm ready to. I've got an early call in the morning, so as far as I'm concerned, I think we pretty much touch all the bases anyway, haven't we, Mike?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much MMA week after week to talk about. We'll save any of that till next week. I mean, the two biggest things, obviously, this week were Raw, and we had talked about and don't really want to talk about it anymore, and Ring of Honor, which I wanted to ask you about if you had seen, because obviously you had some reservations going into it, and I'm unfortunately one of those people that have to wait till, well, tomorrow night to see it because I have no Sinclair outlet in my area, but at least I'll get a chance to see that coming up on Thursday because I do. I'm throwing all my blind faith into this effort for Ring of Honor because I've been a big fan of their iPay-per-views. And if you are one of those people out there that don't think there's any good wrestling out there, give Ring of Honor a try.
I think
the main event,
to me, was a good combination of wrestling and spots. That was, you know, Charlie and Sheldon against Hero and Claudio. And, you know, Nigel, of course, one of my guys. Hero, you know, spent time with me. Kelly and I worked together in developmental. Of course, Corny, I've known Corny since he was a fan, for Christ's sake. I was talking to Mike Johnson today. I think Corny's first television appearance actually was before him and Jim Melby, and I can't think who the third guy was. I pre-taped a personality profile for Southeastern when the WFIA did their convention in Knoxville in 78. And Jimmy was just a teenager at the time, and he won Best Action Photo by a Fan. But we went in on Friday night because we were kayfabe, and obviously we didn't want the guys – I didn't want the guys around the studio watching, you know, where they could see the heels and the baby faces behind the scenes. So I called my director, and we went in on a Friday. I think it was Friday evening. Melby and Cornette, and I forget. Again, for the life of me, I can't remember who the third guy was. And did a personality profile about the Wrestling Fans International and about the convention in Knoxville. So maybe that was Jimmy's actual official first television appearance. I'm not sure.
That's wow.
Yeah, 17 years old, little devil. He just turned 50 that week.
Was his mouth as big then?
Huh?
Was his mouth as big then, or is he a little
more? Oh, yeah.
A little more
quiet, yeah, he
humble.
Was cheeky. But he was respectful. I mean, he really was, you know, he's always been that about the business. And Jimmy's like my younger brother and my son. I'm not sure which, or both. I'm not, you know, but you know, the funny thing, we were talking about different things to do for TV that were a little different, and when he called me to do Smokey years later, that was something he remembered. Remember we talked about doing this or that? I said, oh, my God, yeah, okay, cool. So, yeah, but I think, you know, I think you'll like the Ring of Honor when you finally get a look at it. I'm lucky. I've got it's on twice here. It's on 10 p.m. On the local channel, and then on Saturday night, and then they air it again at midnight. So I DVR. I don't obviously necessarily watch it, you know, in real time, but I do DVR it and watch the whole thing. And I thought it was a very good show. It's a wrestling show, and I think as they go forward, it'll be something that people catch on to. At least I hope they do.
As you know, there's still, you know, kids watching, you know, TV at 10 o'clock at night Saturday night. People were surprised and when it was going to be on and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, there was wrestling on when I was a kid all day because it was the boom of syndication. But you know what? There were always shows on at 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night on Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. And I seem to catch all of them, and I won't be the only one that can do it. And now you're in an era of one-touch DVRs, which can record them too. So keep your fingers crossed for this because this is going to be good. Coming up here on the website, obviously talked about a little bit before for Jeff in Jacksonville, Peach State Pandemonium, Mike Norris, Jerry Oath, and Bobby Simmons tomorrow night, Dave and Danger on Tuesday, phoning it in on Monday, and of course we're going to be back here next week with some sort of combination. Yes, we run with the Freebird rules on this show, but let's go
like Freebirds. You never see the same team twice.
Yeah, or the Russians for you younger people, a little bit younger, or Carolina people. It's like the Russians rule in the 80s too. Obviously, that last Wrestling Weekly coming up. Is that going on this Saturday?
Yeah. Mike and I have been we've been taping on Wednesday, but it goes up or weekly. Oh, I'm thinking, yeah, we're doing Saturday, yeah. And Doc is, well, as you know, we didn't mention, but Doc is using the walker and getting around a little bit. And
making more Facebook posts, keeping everybody updated too, which, you know, is good. He's, you know, got enough to do that. Got a decision to make here coming up that he's being public about, which is, does he want to go off to a hospital a little bit further away from his house because he believes it may be a little bit better. But that's good that he's, you know, after being incommunicado for a couple weeks there, it is so great to actually see him letting everybody know what's going on. So, obviously, best wishes to Doc.
Yep. We're going to do weekly. Vic Socha is joined Will and I, and he's doing a real good job. And of course, and Mike Johnson and I taped Wrestler's Eye Radio today, which will be up tomorrow on the Insider site. And then, like I say, either all three or some combination of the three birds will be back here next Wednesday night.
Right? And ladies and gentlemen, if you're like Les Thatcher and cannot get enough of me, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare will be with Adam Summers tomorrow. It's almost hockey season, so, you know, we're going to throw a little bit of that in there as well. That'll be up on the WrestlingObserver.com website probably Friday morning. And, of course, I was trying to think of some good nickname for Brian, but I'll just leave it alone. Brian Alvarez and I, hopefully, back this week on Wrestling Observer Live, Sunday 6 to 8, also WrestlingObserver.com and the SportsByline.com radio network. So, Les, I'd like to thank you for not being rich and being here tonight.
Well, thank you, Michael, and I'll see you next week.
Yes, sir. Good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.